Welcome everyone to the Sports Review here on Planet 104.6 FM or on Planet Audio. And in fact, I should actually introduce the show as the Westprint Sports Review, proudly sponsored by Westprint. For all your printing needs, go to westprint.co.nz. Fantastic. They are fantastic printers. And of course, their motto is they push the boundaries, and sometimes we push the boundaries here. Just a quick lineup for the show today. We'll have some recap on Saturday's America's Cup race with Rod Davis, along with a preview of the semi-finals between Luna Rossa and American Magic. No Brendan McNeese today. He's got a bit of a family thing he has to do, and he let me know. But instead, we have former All-White Noel Barclay talking to us a bit of football, FA Cup, a lot of sad scousers out there. And then we go to the panel, the man, the legend, Mark Watson, and the silver tongue, silver fox, Sean Summerfield. Well, on Friday, just gone past, the Breakers started their campaign. And here to talk to us about basketball is the CEO of the Wellington Saints, all-round good bloke, heaps of knowledge on basketball. I'd like to welcome to the show and a very, very good afternoon to Jordan Mills. Jordan, I really hope you're enjoying your anniversary day in Wellington.
It's a beautiful day here. Thank you, everyone. It's sunny. We're definitely enjoying it down here.
It certainly is. We've got a cracker of a day in here, and of course, obviously, we come to here with a little bit of a cloud with the community transmission case when it comes to COVID. Less hope for the best here in New Zealand, but the Breakers started off their campaign on Friday. They went down 94-91 to the Adelaide 36ers. Really, Jordan, a real terrible first quarter. What were some of your thoughts on the game? I was really impressed with Ty Webster.
Oh, for sure. I think the rust was going to be there anyway. It was their first game of the season, and Adelaide's fourth game of the season. So they've had a few games under their belt to get their movements going right. I just thought they started slow, but Ty Webster was outstanding. He had obviously 34 points. He did anchor the offense for the better part of the game. But it was disappointing that a lot of the other guys didn't. Thomas Abercrombie's and Rob Lowe's didn't probably get the touches that they deserved. And they miss Corey Webster a lot. So he'll be back in the next couple of games, hopefully, and that'll make a huge difference for their offense going forward.
Yeah, I was just going to say the lack of penetration from that center position really was quite obvious in that game. Rob Lowe got 5 points out of the whole game, and really, as you previously said, your main concern was around that centre and forward area. So that's what. Do you believe that could be a stumbling block for the Breakers as they move forward into the season?
For sure, their import Colton Iverson, who only managed 10 minutes, had 4 fouls in those 10 minutes, and. Yep. Was a plus minus 18 on that game, which means that those 10 minutes on the court, they lost those 10 minutes by 18 points, which is absolutely huge. Yeah. He was really, really disappointing for his first outing. So he's definitely not going to need to show more if they want to be a championship contender this season. I think he had 1 point as well. So it was, for an import, that's just not good enough.
No, it isn't. It isn't. Of course, he came with great reps, obviously playing in the Israeli Basketball League, had experience at the highest level in European basketball. You'd expect a bit better instead of 4 fouls in 10 minutes.
For sure. I think that's something that they've got to work on. Imports always take a little time to get adjusted with a different officiating than what they're used to, but that's just not good enough going forward at all.
No, it isn't, especially with all the resources that have been put into bringing him over to the New Zealand Breakers. Finn Delaney was quite good. I actually looked at Finn Delaney's performance, really is playing very well at the moment, and probably one of the real future stars of New Zealand basketball.
For sure. Finn was outstanding. I think he cramped. He looked like he had some cramp in his calf or maybe in his hamstring towards the end of the game, so he didn't play the last couple of minutes in overtime, which really, if he was on the floor, it could have changed the outcome of the game. He was, in my opinion, the second best player for the Breakers last Friday. He was energetic. He plays tough. He plays hard. And you know what you're going to get from him every night on the floor, which is you know, energy, effort, and obviously great athleticism.
And of course, the Breakers will play the 36ers on Wednesday. What do you believe they need to do? Do you believe they need to change their game plan around Jordan? What would you believe they would need to do differently?
Yeah, I think they need to get everybody involved a little bit more early in the game. The Thomas Abercrombies and Lamar Pattersons as well, try and get them touches. But I think they'll right their wrongs from last Friday for this coming Wednesday night, and they should take care of the 36ers. They're a more talented team. So I think that first game, Rust will be out the way. Again, hopefully Corey is back for the Breakers because he'll add a real scoring punch for them off the bench, and they should take care of business.
Hopefully you're right on that one. Of course, the Hawks are free from free, the Illawarra Hawks, which you've actually picked as the dark horse for this competition, Jordan. What were some of your other highlights out of the Australian ABL, NBL?
It was good to see Perth back in action. They played last night. It was their first game of the season, and obviously the defending champions, they looked good. Bryce Cotton, the reigning MVP, was outstanding again. He had 27 in the game, and they beat the South East Melbourne Phoenix quite comfortably by about 11 in the end. People were writing them off at the start of the season, saying they didn't think they were talented enough, but they obviously showed that they're still going to be there or thereabouts with what they've put together. That was probably the most encouraging part of that week. Melbourne play again tonight, so they've only played one game, so it'll be really good to see them back in action, who I think are the favourites. So they're back in action against Cairns, I believe, tonight, which will be a good game of basketball.
Yeah, of course, they're coached by Dean Vickerman, who's a former coach of the Wellington Saints and a former coach of the New Zealand Breakers. So that'll be very, very interesting. Of course, Shea Ellie, he plays for Melbourne, so it'll be interesting to see how he goes tonight in that game. And of course, we'll talk a bit of NBA, and of course, I did get a chance to watch the 76ers versus the Boston Celtics, and I'll tell you something, 76ers in the Eastern Conference look really good at the moment.
For sure. Joel Embiid's looking like possibly an MVP candidate at the moment. He's had back-to-back massive games. I think he had 40 in the first game against Boston and 37 against Boston in the second game. So he's looking like a real MVP candidate. And they've got Doc Rivers there, the former Celtic and Clippers coach, with his first year at the helm. He's changed the way they play. They're kind of a bit free-flowing more than previous years, and they've added a couple of really good three-point shooters, so they've started amazingly.
Yeah, and of course they had two good wins over the weekend. We go to the Western Conference, and of course LA Lakers are leading the conference, but the Utah Jazz, they're really on their heels, and of course the team to probably watch out for would be the LA Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, the Clippers are the most talented team outside the Lakers in the Western Conference. They fell short last year and looked like they didn't have their chemistry right, but they're slowly looking like they're getting better. The Jazz, I mean, they're an interesting one. They tend to do this every couple of years where they have a good regular season, or they have good periods where they just kind of falter in the playoffs. But Donovan Mitchell's really taken another stride in his young career, and he's looking outstanding. I think they've won 7 in a row. They're definitely playing a really good brand of basketball.
Yeah, well, that's good to hear. And of course, Stephen Adams, he played 23 minutes. Now, I didn't get to watch that game, so I'll admit to you now, has he got an injury concern, or was he just taken off, or was it just a lack of minutes? Because
they're really struggling at the moment, the Pelicans. They lost to probably the worst team in the NBA at the moment.
Yeah,
Timberwolves are missing their two best players. And they still went down to them. They're not clicking at the moment. Hopefully they can turn it around. They don't look in sync. And Steve looked healthy, to be perfectly honest with you. They just pulled him out and went for different lineups, which didn't work either. So it'll be interesting to see what they do next game, what kind of adjustments they make, because they definitely need to make some.
Yeah, they certainly do, and of course I think really for them to actually make that change, and I'm not just saying because Stephen Adams is a Kiwi, but I think you've got to give Stephen more time on the court. for him to do
no
his
doubt.
Stuff. Yeah, and we all know what a talented player he is, and he is rated as one of the best 100 players in the NBA, which is, you know, which is quite a good company to be in. Between me and you,
no doubt.
Now, apart from that, Jordan, what are your basketball picks for the week ahead, mate?
Obviously, I think the Breakers, as I said earlier, will take care of Adelaide on Wednesday night. So I think that'll be the game that the listeners are most interested in watching. A game to watch tonight will be Melbourne versus Cairns on a Monday night, which is great. There's some basketball midweek, and there's not a lot of sport on. So I'm looking forward to that, and I think Melbourne will handily take care of the Taipans, that'll be the two games I'll be looking forward to this week.
And just on a national scene, obviously you guys are preparing your squads for the New Zealand NBL. Possibly there's been no more further information on whether you can get the imports over to New Zealand at this stage.
We're told from immigration that we'll be finding out early this week. So whether it's tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, we're not 100% sure when. So we're kind of holding out hope that that we'll get some good news this week. We might have an announcement. We're hoping tomorrow night on TV1 News about one of our imports that we've signed. We're just going through the motions of that. So we're looking forward to hopefully getting some good news after that.
Now, Jordan, can you reveal it to the listeners who this import is, or are we under wraps?
Unfortunately, I can't. I'm bound to hopefully have it on the news tomorrow night. And if they don't want to release it tomorrow night on TV1 Sport News, then you can be the first person to tell.
Okay, yeah, well, that's it, because we're firm supporters of basketball here at Planet FM.
Likewise.
Hey, Jordan, it's been great catching up to you. Hope you how's the weekend been in Wellington? Anniversary day, you're probably a lot of people out at the moment.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. We've had a bit of an up-and-down weekend weather-wise, as always is in Wellington, but today we're blessed with some sun. So I'm going to go for probably a walk up Mount Victoria and get some sun, get a bit of exercise in, and enjoy the day off.
Well, good for you, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of the week, and good luck with the announcement of the import signing. I really, obviously, by the sounds of it, you can maybe let me know off here, but obviously he is probably a very good import you've secured.
Yeah, for sure. He's definitely one of a kind in terms of what he brings to a basketball game, so I think he'll get a lot of traction.
Oh, wow, and I think we look with I'm really looking with excitement to see who it is, and if TV1 News don't want to announce it, well, you know where to come to your friends here at Planet FM on the Sports Review.
Thank you very much. Enjoy
okay.
the rest of your week.
Yep, same to you too. That was Jordan Mills, and it's great having a chat to him on basketball. A real knowledgeable bloke on basketball. I really enjoy his input into the show. So next up, we're going to talk a bit of America's Cup with Rod Davis. Really great race on Saturday between Ineos UK and Luna Rossa. And we'll also preview the America's Cup semi-final with Luna Rossa versus hopefully the American Magic team is back on track. So we'll play a bit of music and we'll get on to Rod Davis next.
Thank you.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Review here on the West Print Sports Review on Planet 104.6, or if you listen on planetaudio.org.nz. And of course, fantastic day in Auckland, and it was great on Saturday. What a great America's Cup race in the Prada Cup between Ineos UK and Luna Rossa. Fantastic. And on the line we have America's Cup. I'm going to call him a legend because his involvement in the sport is plus 40 years. The guy's got great knowledge, and it's always a great pleasure to have online. Good afternoon to Rod Davis. Hi, Rod. How are you today?
Yeah, very good. Legend makes him sound really old, though. I'm not sure. I am old, but anyway.
Well, you are a bit of a legend, Rod. You've been involved with a lot of America's Cups team, and you've seen the evolution of America's Cup, and from the old 12 metres to what we have today in the AC36s. But I was just going to, just on Saturday's racing, Rob, you must have really enjoyed that match racing. It came down to some really great match racing. What were some of your thoughts on that race on Saturday?
Well, that actually was a great match race for the ages. Whatever class you're in, that was a really good toe-to-toe battle all the way around the course. So I think from the sailing enthusiasts and the match racing enthusiasts, it was just a great race. From the general public standpoint, boats going around doing 30 knots and 40 knots and above, it was just, it had something for everybody. So that really, far and away, the best race we've seen so far, and that would be as good a match race anywhere you'd see in any of the America's Cups or the Louis Vuitton series. Excellent stuff.
It certainly was, Rod, and it really makes, this America's Cup series, this Prada Cup series, it's been fantastic to watch. And of course, we've got the semi-finals coming up this week with Luna Rossa and American Magic, who look like they're going to be back on the water, and it's great news, especially for that syndicate. I know Team New Zealand, a lot of the other syndicates have been helping them out, and just some of the thoughts, it's a real tough one for American Magic, and what are some of their aims? They'll be going out to win it, but realistically, Rod, what chance do you give them?
Well, I think, one of the things that American Magic is in a position now, they have nothing to lose, so they will be aggressive with the changes they'll make to their boat. Obviously, they're going to repair the damage and do the wiring, but also they had in mind to make the boat better and the downrange and the lower wind speeds, and they will be very aggressive in making those changes because they have really you don't win the America's Cup by being conservative, and they definitely need to have something extra in the tank. Honestly, I would think that American Magic, in the first couple of races could struggle. They could drop two races to Luna Rossa before they find their feet. The longer the regatta goes on, the better it is for American Magic. If it did go to seven races, then you'd have to put your money on American Magic because their learning curve and their ability to sail the boat without breakdowns will climb a lot with each day that goes by.
It certainly is, Rod. And wouldn't that be a marvelous story to see them make that Prada Cup final and then maybe hopefully move on to the America's Cup final, because that would just be such a great story, because about a week ago we didn't... They're basically, after that disaster, their challenge was in disarray, and it's great to see the hard work done there. The talent is in there, Rod. You've got Dean Barker, an experienced America's Cup match racer. You've got people like Terry Hutchinson, real experienced guys, and so the talent is there.
Yeah, without a doubt. They've got plenty of experience. I think they have quite a quick boat once they get it sorted and stuff. The challenge for them is so little time on the water leading up, just to make sure that the systems work. And they've had to put all new systems in the boat. So there's, it's not a thing where you just plug in a new system and it works instantly. So that's their thing. Really, American Magic has to keep Luna Rossa off of match point and they can afford to go two races down, that's not a problem. Keep them off of match point.
Certainly do. And, of course, really the pressure would really be on Luna Rossa because they're probably, you know, they're going against which is the unknown. Or they don't know how fast American Magic will be. And so there would be huge pressure on them, Rod.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. It's almost a little bit like when you have the A-team play the B-team. Right now, American Magic, it just wants to get out there and sail and looking for ways to win the regatta, where Luna Rossa, who on paper should win the regatta, are looking ways to not lose the regatta. And often when you have your A-team play your B-team wins because their attitude is just, whatever happens, we just got to find a way to win the regatta. And the A-team sitting there, oh, I hope I don't screw up and lose. So we'll just have to play it out. But like I said, the longer the racing goes, the better it is for American Magic.
It certainly is, and of course, I think we're all looking forward to that. And of course, there was some interesting news. Team New Zealand has a new backer, Gabe, and I just don't have his name right here. And I saw that on one network news on Saturday, and of course, that sounds promising, and that will really help. Having that billionaire backer will really help Team New Zealand in the future, and hopefully keep the regatta in any future regatta should Team New Zealand defend the America's Cup in New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, this regatta isn't the regatta that was envisioned 3 years ago before COVID and everything else, but the images being sent around the world from New Zealand. Picture yourself in London right now dark winter time and, you know, you're locked down and everything else and you're looking down at New Zealand. It's a pretty good advertisement for New Zealand in the long term, that's for sure.
It certainly would. And, of course, I said to a friend of mine, because he asked my opinion on the America's Cup, who should challenge, and I said, to get more eyes on it, you probably, from a, say, commercial background or from a television point, would probably be NES UK to challenge because they haven't been in an America's Cup final since, we're talking 40 to 50 years now.
Yeah, it'd be a long time before we have the challenger, the actual challenger in the cup itself being the English. And I'm trying to think how long ago that's before my time.
Well, it definitely is. I think it was way before you were born, Rod, and I'm being very nice here, young man.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Anyway, Rod, it was great having a chat to you, and we'll hopefully we'll have a bit of a chat next week because I'm really looking forward to the semi-finals. I'm actually going to go down to Wynyard Quarter at the weekend and have a quick look at that, and hopefully get involved with the fans because it looks like a bit of fun down there. So you have a good rest of the week, and we'll catch up next week, Rod.
Perfecto. Okay.
Hey, thanks a lot. That was Rod Davis. Gives us great analyst. He's a good analyst of America's Cup, and he is a legend. He's been around, and he's seen the evolution of America's Cup. Well, I'm just going to play a bit of music. No Madman McNeice. We've got an Irishman. You might be able to understand, and Noel Barclay, Nick. So we'll just play a bit of music. Welcome everyone back to the Whisperin' Sports Review here on Planet 104.6 FM, or if you listen on planetaudio.org.nz. And of course, usually at this time we have the one and only Brendan McNeice, but he's got a few family things he has to do today, and so I know he's probably at Wellington Airport at the moment. So I hope you listen in, Brendan, because we have an Irish, a man from Ireland, a former All-White, and a legend of the game here in New Zealand, Mr. Noel Barclay. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, Evan. Thank you for that introduction.
Now, you've got some big shoes to fill in. As you know, Brendan McNeice is a larger-than-life personality.
Yeah, absolutely. I've met Brendan on several occasions back in the TV3 days, and but I'm sure he's just as happy as I am this morning with the Liverpool United FA Cup game. So good on you, Brendan. Look after your family.
Yeah, no. I think it's a bit of a special occasion for young Mr. McNeice, and it's good to have somebody who's actually going to talk about football, not some nonsensical stuff as Mr. McNeice does. And I hope you're listening, Brendan, because that's a real shot at you. But anyway, Noel, yeah, let's get on to the FA Cup. And I tell you what, it's been a terrible week for Liverpool, hasn't it, the last week?
Well, it's been a bad month, really. You know, I mean, at least they got a couple of goals today, and they actually looked a little bit better than what they have done. But to go 4 league games without a goal and then to lose at Anfield for the first time in, like, was it 78 games?
Yeah,
so
that's right.
It's been grim, and I have to admit that it's been somewhat enjoyable because I've been getting it in the year for a long time from the Scousers.
Yes,
they're on their knees, that's for sure, and not quite sure how they're going to dig themselves out of this.
Yeah, I know. I know that we've got our sympathy level, if we had it 100%, is about probably less than 2%. As being true Manchester United supporters, no, but. But yeah, but I have to say, it really was. And I'll tell you something, Fernandes, doesn't he make a difference in that Manchester United side?
It was so remarkable. I mean, he touched the ball more in 20 minutes than Van de Beek did in the first 60-odd minutes. And as much as I wanted Van de Beek to get a bit of a run, he really didn't grab that opportunity. Fernandes comes on, he sets up a great chance for Cavani, the header that hit the post. He's on the ball, he's trying to play. He's just incredible. I mean, if he gets injured, you know, they're obviously going to we have some problems. And you've got to get other people, you know, to back him up. But he's very much a very dynamic player for us, along with Pogba. And I think Cavani, those three have really making them tick at the minute. And in a very average Premier League, I'm going to say average, I mean the standard overall, I think, has dropped because of what COVID has done. It's done it to all the leagues around the world. And that's actually helped Man United. But they've got good team spirit, and we're up there. And, you know, to be fair, there's any one of 6 or 7 teams could win it, with Man City probably looking the best at this stage, I might say.
Yeah, well, of course, the big news coming out is Kevin De Bruyne is out for 6 weeks, by the sounds of it, with an injury. And, of course, Leicester, who I think it could be real dark horses in this premiership. Jamie Vardy had a hernia operation, was out for a few weeks. So everything on the premiership is really leaning towards Manchester United, but it is so tight to call because Liverpool still are there, Everton are still about, Tottenham you can't write off as well too.
Well, I think if you do that, Eamon, I think Leicester have timed that operation well. They've got a few easy games and an FA Cup, obviously, today, and I think they need to get him fit. I mean, they were, before they beat Chelsea, I think it was, they were 28-1 to win the league. I think they dropped about 18-1 now. I mean, that's got to be a great bet right now when you think of where they're sitting. And they're a dark horse for me.
Oh, yeah, and despite his, naysayers, Brendan Rodgers has really put together a really good squad, and it may have been built on the Premier winning squad, but he's really, there is some, not only Vardy got Madison, you've got a number of players there that are playing really good football at the moment.
Yeah, I got a bit of time for Brendan Rodgers, aside from the fact that he's Northern Irish, and he's also got Johnny Evans at the back, who's also part of the Northern Irish setup. But he did well at Liverpool, and he got yanked out of there before he really got a chance to prove himself. Went to Celtic and then won everything. So he's doing really well. And don't forget, you know, he lost, you know, £130 million worth of defenders with Maguire and Chilwell, and just soldiered on, and there they are sitting right at the top. So fair play to him.
Yeah, he's actually played really well. I suppose you wouldn't call this an upset, but Southampton had a 1-0 win over Arsenal. Really not certain, they're not having a great time at Arsenal at the moment, are they, Noel?
Well, yeah, hot and cold. I mean, they're the record FA Cup holders, 13 times, one ahead of Man United. And it's a bit surprising to see them go out. But the other thing is with Southampton, they're a tough nut to crack this year. I mean, they've been very, very good. Obviously, at home, you know, the home-away thing doesn't matter so much, but they've got a good home record. And Arsenal, you just don't quite know what you're going to get. And, that wasn't a total surprise for me. And, of course, most of the FA Cup games, they were a little bit lopsided in terms of, you know, big teams versus the little teams, apart from Man United, who always seem to get a Premier League team.
Yeah.
Man City end up getting sort of teams you've never heard of before, or they're in the third division. But look, that's the way it goes, the cup. And sometimes it's best to, you know, play the tough teams and keep momentum.
And, of course, next for Manchester United in the FA Cup will be our old West Ham. And, of course, you know, we get a lot of stick from Liverpool supporters, but West Ham always love getting one on Manchester United, don't they, Noel?
Yeah, and so will David Moyes, who has
interesting.
He's still wimping about that, so he is. So, I think we're too strong with them at home. I think it's good to get a team of that calibre, because I think what happens with Man United, if they get somebody like Watford, like they did the last round, they tend to take it easy and sneak through, and you run the risk of getting knocked out. So a good draw for us, and that gets you in, I think, to the quarterfinals.
Certainly does. And did you get a chance to watch the Phoenix last night, Noel?
I did, actually. It was those games in the A-League sometimes tend to be at an unsociable hour.
Yeah.
But 10 past 8 was great. Look, it was a bit of a funny game, really. I mean, the Phoenix completely dominated possession and shots and so on without actually looking that good, and get hit by a couple of goals on the counter-attack. So very disappointing result, performance-wise, you have to say, you know, because they had the ball, it was pretty good. The front three, in particular, Hemed and Soterio, I thought they were terrible. I mean, he's an import, big money, and he looks well off the pace at the minute, Hemed. So, yeah, they got some challenges there. 8 games without a win. It's not a great record to have. And sitting down the bottom of the table with, believe it or not, Melbourne in victory. So, they need to get a move on.
Yeah, well, you were just saying about him and Soterio. I'm not a fan of Soterio. I don't believe he offers anything up at the front. I think what the Phoenix miss is a real good out-and-out striker. Like we did last year, have a good out-and-out striker in Gary Hooper. We've had Roy Krishna in the past, who are goal scorers, and that's where I think we're lacking. I will say one thing on this. I've been quite impressed with some of the Kiwi boys that have come into it, like Clayton Lewis has been playing well. James McGarry has actually been playing well too. No.
Well, funny you should mention James McGarry. I was texting his old man last night, who was in my mind one of the best footballers ever on this planet. And he just said he needed game time. He gave the ball away once. But he just was razor sharp, good crossing, good passing. He never got caught possession. And, what a good backup for Libby Kakachi in that left back position. And gets forward, gets shots. You know, he had a blinder. I actually thought Matthew Redenton also did quite well last night. When he got subbed, that was a bit of a surprise. I'm surprised that Clayton Lewis didn't start, because he'd looked quite useful in the first game. So, yeah, look, they just need to find their feet. But unfortunately, in this league, if you lose 3 or 4, all of a sudden, you know, it's a bit of a battle to get up there. But who would have thought Sydney mid-table and Melbourne at the bottom? So it just sort of goes to this whole thing about what COVID and preparation has done to all of the leagues around the world, in Madrid and Barcelona sitting down the table, and Spain and Juventus struggling in Italy, and that's just sort of the way of the world, really.
certainly is. Just getting to some of the local stuff, Noel. New Zealand football looks like are going to revamp the National League, make it more of a regional type situation. Now, from my point of view, is that I think the National League, which we have at the moment, while it's okay, is probably a hell of a lot more better than taking it back to the regional things. Obviously, the finance involved in running a National League team is a lot of money, and of course, when you have one team dominating, as Auckland City FC has done, it becomes a pretty lopsided competition.
Yeah, look, it's a tricky one here because obviously, you know, from my background, I would always want to have a true National League with all the best teams in there. Unfortunately, you've got a situation that in these times, and whether that's to do with, you know, what we've gone through in the last year, effectively there only is two teams in that league that are actually sustainable. All of the rest of them are unfinancial, including the ones that couldn't actually participate this year, so it didn't work. So they did something about it, and not everybody's pleased with it, but I think what they've done is recognise, you know, that is it time and a place to actually make a change. And the other issue that a lot of the clubs have had here is that there's been no pathway to actually sort of get promotion into that top league, so they've certainly opened that up. So if you want to go for it in Division 2, get into Div 1 and then qualify through being in the top 3 or the top 4, there's a pathway. So that's really important, and you know, there's going to be some clubs that are going to have to sort of readjust, but there's also massive clubs that are now going to be a participant in this that couldn't get in before, like Western Suburbs in Wellington.
Yeah.
You've got the New Auckland United and the merged Northern Rovers. Those large clubs that were locked out, now they can actually sort of have a pathway in. So there's pluses and minuses, and suppressing player payments is another big one. You know, paying players in front of 100 people is just ridiculous. So I think it's got some merit. It's not perfect, but I don't think there is a perfect thing for, you know, geographically New Zealand's tough. So regional football for now, I think, is okay. You know, it's not perfect, but it'll do for now.
Okay, well, yeah, I was wanting to discuss this with you because that's quite interesting, because it is in many ways, we go back to the national leagues of the 90s, 80s and 70s where we had the traditional clubs like the Mount Wellingtons, like the Christchurch Uniteds, like the North Shore Uniteds, like the Wellington Diamond, Miramar Rangers, etc. So maybe there could be a light at the tunnel, but, you know, I have to say from this national league's point of view, Noel, Auckland City just seems to get any all-white, any player that's coming back from overseas tends to end up at Kiwi Tear Street, which, to be honest with you, you know, they're playing by the rules, but it makes it a bit of a lopsided competition.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think this format will change because they've had the Summer National League and the World Club World Cup to lure players in, and that's good on them. Now you've got winter football and players can't play winter and summer, so you've got Auckland City will have to compete with Auckland United, they'll have to compete with Eastern Suburbs on a level playing field because they're all in the one, they're all playing at the same time of the year. So it might level things out, and the purists will say that's going to weaken the competition. Yeah, maybe it will, but you still have to be sustainable. You can't run a league and lose tons of money. It just doesn't work, and you have to recognise that, I think.
Okay, well, that was really good, Noel. I have to say it was absolute pleasure having you on the show. I've really enjoyed your input today. It's good to have a football analyst that speaks common sense instead of a bit of the usual I get from every Monday. I'll tell you something, I'm beginning to get grey hairs because I have to go on air every time with him on a Monday. You wonder what he's going to come out with.
You got that buzzer.
Oh, well, yeah, we've had to use it a few times, but no, it was fantastic. Thanks for coming on the show, and a special thanks to my old mate Ricardo Ball, who was able to get me Noel's number. So you have a great day, Noel, and we'll hopefully catch up soon.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for bringing me on. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Cheers. That was Noel Barclay. That was great. And I'll tell you what, he's really great analyst on football, isn't he? And a real top bloke. Next up, we have the panel. And we're going to be talking a lot today. I'm going to give them a bit more time because I got told by a certain person that I cut them off a bit early on last Monday. So we'll give them a bit of time. So I'll play a bit of music and then we'll try and get the two superstars of the show on, Mark Watson and Sean Summerfield. Welcome, everyone, back to the Sports Review. We're all back on air, and of course, that was a bit of Simply Red. I used to get mistaken for Mick Hucknall in my younger days, but I don't know. Those days are definitely gone. I'm more a grey-reddish. But anyway, I'd like to welcome to the show the man, the legend, and the hopeless romantic, Mark Watson. How are you, Mark?
Good, eh? Very good, thank you. I'm just actually standing down at Murawai Beach between the flags watching my two kids go surfing, so not too bad indeed.
That's a cracking day, and of course, on the line we have the Silver Tongue, Silver Fox, the host of probably the best motorsport show on TV, the CRC Motorsport Show, Mr. Sean Summerfield. Sean, how are you today, mate?
Good, thanks. G'day, guys.
G'day, and well, it's great. Well, we're going to kick it off, Sean. New Zealand Grand Prix, Shane van Gisbergen, what a fantastic, from last to first, what a fantastic Grand Prix it was.
Look, the least elegant way of describing this guy is he's a freak, but he is that naturally gifted. And, you know, to get in that car, I heard that he struggled to fit in it. He's quite a tall guy, broad shoulders. He struggled to fit in the car. I think he seemed to be sitting up higher than everyone else in the car. You could see his hands working on the wheel. He was literally too big for the car. He went to start the race or start the car, and he pushed the fire extinguisher button instead of the engine start. So that caused a bit of a problem, and he had to start from pit lane. So that's dead last. And, you know, he then came through with 10 to go in the lead. Just phenomenal. 9 to go, sorry. And just no one could catch him. Just really something truly impressive. But also, you know, worth mentioning as well as we had these sort of legends, the older guys, but also we had the youngsters there as well as the V8 guys. And we had Naitoa got pole position, and also Matthew Payne, another young gun coming through, finished third. But, yeah, just something really, really impressive from van Gisbergen, because, trust me, this is nothing like a supercar. Then again, the Ford Escort he won at Jack's Ridge in the two-wheel drive is nothing like a supercar. The AP4 rally car four-wheel drive that he won after Hayden Paddon crashed is nothing like a rally car. And I'll tell you right now, if he'd had a go in the sprint cars or midgets at Western Springs, I reckon we would have seen him win that as well. The guy, and I'm not he has done some SIBO before, but the guy is that much of a freak.
Yeah, what I like about Shane van Gisbergen is he's just the ultimate Kiwi bloke, isn't he? He won Bathurst, he was straight back on a plane, he just wanted to get back to New Zealand, enjoy the moment with his parents, he stayed over here. I mean, you know, a lot of guys would soak up the limelight over in Australia and sort of get right into the whole celebrity mentality, but you sort of feel for him. He's almost a historian of the sport, isn't he? He wants these things on a CV, he wants to win them, and I just think it was great promotion for the New Zealand Grand Prix, which has probably maybe not had the profile in recent times, amongst, you know, always does amongst the pure sort of motorsport aficionados, but what I call brand athletes can take that sport and expand it. And so, people, you know, I started to take a lot more interest over the weekend to see how van Gisbergen was going. Also, Kenny Smith, clearly at 80 years of age. So, yeah, and then to win from pit lane, just simply remarkable. Oh, the disappointing thing for me is, wouldn't it just be nice if, and I'm not necessarily referring so much to Shane van Gisbergen, maybe more the Scotty McLaughlins and stuff, more because of the size and stuff, but wouldn't it just be nice if there was a more genuine pathway through to Formula One where it was based just purely on merit, so that we could show the whole world what Shane van Gisbergen is capable of doing, of what some of our New Zealand drivers are doing, without all the sort of the politics almost sort of keeping them sort of stuck in Australasia?
Oh, yeah, it's a crazy world. Someone once said to me, where there's dough, there's go. And, you know, and to be honest, it comes down to the fact that if there was to be a Kiwi driver, what would it do for a global sponsor? Well, bugger all, really. We haven't got the population to warrant that. So it's got to be on a mega level of talent. Scott Dixon, simple fact, is one of the best drivers on the planet. The greatest driver in IndyCars for the last 5 years on straight-out stats and on results, just phenomenal. Shane's interesting, too big for a Formula One car, but he's won in the GT Series in Europe. He's won in the States. He gets in and just goes for it. And, Mark, it's actually a bit more granular than that. He just loves to drive and to race or to ride or whatever he does. If it's remote control cars, it's whatever he can do. It's just purely about driving. And he said years ago, if he could race every weekend, he would. Things have changed because he's got on. It's a bit more intense driving for a top team like Red Bull in Australia. But purely, he is a racer's racer. He doesn't want to do media. He just wants to race. It's all he wants to do.
Okay, well, that was great, Sean. And just one thing, gentlemen, did any of us get to watch the America's Cup or the UFC over the weekend?
UFC, no.
Yeah, no, look, I certainly followed. I sort of like Dan Hooker, man, our grammar old boy, and clearly wanting to see McGregor, and I was pleased he sort of got his comeuppance. Oh, I think he's just taken the whole off-the-field stuff a bit too far, and guys like that just need to be humbled occasionally, and you can put it down to a lack of time in the octagon and a lack of performance. That you know, that's arguably the same for both fighters. But it is amazing just how big it is. You know, there was a time, I used to have arguments when I was at Radio Sport with the news guys about covering it, and they said, oh, we're not going to cover legalised prison violence. And I'm like, well, I don't really know whether you have your own personal bias, because the reality is it is a huge global sport, and now, you know, you do see the major news sites sort of all running live updates on the UFC, and they realise they can't just, you know, turn a blind eye and be prejudiced towards it. The America's Cup, look, I mean, anytime Ben Ainslie's on a boat, a little bit like a Shane van Gisbergen, and saying this guy's just got a history of winning. And like, you know, unfortunately for, say, a Dean Barker, he's got a history of losing. So you do just sort of get a sense that if Barker and the Americans get back into this cup, I do just think Ainsley will find a way of getting through to this America's Cup, because the guy is a winner.
Yeah, and it's interesting with that, because I watched it. I'm fascinated by what they do from a physics point of view. And I was looking at the speeds, and they're actually quite similar, but it's all to do, they reckon, with the configuration of the crew on Ineos, because they've got the other bloke, he was an Olympic gold medalist, I think, and I won't say his name because I forget it. He's looking out for wind all the time, looking out for conditions, and they reckon that's the difference, because they're finding out where the wind is, and you'll see them favour the side where there's a bit more, and they appreciate what the land is doing to the wind out there. And, you know, you look at the maths, guys, you add a knot or so to the wind, and you can add 3 or 4 knots to their boat speed. So there's big differences there.
Well, you go back to when we were winning the Cup in the 1990s, always Tom Schnakenberg, wasn't it? You know, the sort of a scientist, the professor there with his pencil and, you know, just these smart, smart men who just, yeah, have just an almost an intrinsic feel for, yeah, where the position, where that wind is. And, yeah, sometimes it's, you know, I think the very, very best, it's not something you can necessarily learn. It's, and yes, it's based on experience, but they just somehow have some sort of natural tuition, don't they?
Yeah, and that's why I'm a bit anxious, mate, because that was a really cool race on Saturday. And as much as I know we've got the best skipper in the world in Burling, but you sometimes wonder about match fitness. And by the time the two boats finish the final series for the Prada Cup, they're going to be properly match fit. We're in for an absolute ding-dong. Imagine if England wins it back for the first time since they first lost it.
Yeah, I still think, though, you know, I always say in a lot of sport that it's the Indian, not the arrow, but I've got a sneaky feeling. I just got a feeling that this New Zealand boat, I still just think will be too quick. But, you know, give the Brits another three-year cycle, give them some more time in the sport. And, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it in time, if we do lose the cup, it goes back to Britain. But it'd be great for the sport, wouldn't it? I mean, it's the history of it. The Brits would jump all over it. And I'd imagine that they would adopt it like we did, you know, 1987, and you know, really start to chase it then and understand the magnitude of it.
It's amazing when you hear them commenting on the different conversations on the boats, that sort of the lack of panic on board Ineos compared to Prada. I found that quite interesting, though, you know, looking at the way they were talking. Because things happen so damn fast, and I suddenly appreciated that these yachts can be approaching each other at 150 kilometres an hour. Which is quite mind-blowing.
One of the things I was going to say, when you mentioned about the calmness, was right at the finish, Sean, when a lot of the crew were celebrating, but Sir Ben Ainslie said, hey, calm down, guys, calm down. It's only a race.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, that was really interesting. He just put the dampeners on it straight away, and I wonder if, you know, if they're going for that sort of humble approach, or that, mate, don't celebrate till the job's done. It's... It was very rugby, wasn't it, guys?
Indeed.
And, of course, Mark, some of your thoughts on the sporting week.
Yeah, look, I just want to comment, actually. I was lucky enough to go down and commentate the Tauranga Half Ironman over the weekend, triathlon, 32nd edition, probably the biggest race in New Zealand to try and win. And, world-class field. I mean, our endurance athletes over the Half Ironman distance, 2K swim, 90-kilometre ride, 21K run, are amongst the very best in the world. And we had Braden Curry, who's been fifth in Hawaii at the Ironman. He's won the coast-to-coast three times. He's won this race twice before, up against a young guy by the name of Kyle Smith, who's just 23 years age, out of Taupo. Won the race last year on debuts, won a lot of big half Ironman races. Then you throw into the mix Mike Phillips, who had won New Zealand Ironman, won the race before. Then you had the legend himself and Cameron Brown, and boy, it was just a wonderful field. And in the finish, it was a young man, Kyle Smith, who ended up beating Braden Curry by just 10 seconds over that distance. Just 10 seconds. Quite remarkable. And then on the women's side, Teresa Adams set a new course record, beating Samantha Warriner. The record, Samantha Warriner, a two-time Olympian, by 13 minutes. Just rode brilliantly. She's a New Zealand road cycling time trial champion, actually, and she probably should have won the elite New Zealand women's road race last year. And she ended up beating a girl by the name of Hannah Wells, Dr. Hannah Wells, had won it the last 2 years. And so just some wonderful racing, 1,200 athletes, great atmosphere, wonderful event. And, it was just exciting. It was just good to get back there, get amongst it, and just sort of realise just, you know, how good our top endurance athletes are, because they don't often get a lot of media coverage. But, boy, I tell you what, they train hard, these guys and girls, and they don't leave a stone unturned at the front end. And so, no, just a pleasure to go back down and sort of, you know, be involved in that again. It's been clearly a big part of my life in the past.
Okay, that was great, Mark. What about, Sean, what's some of your comments on the sporting week, which has just been in the sporting week ahead?
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm watching this sort of Toyota series now to see how the drivers that weren't doing the one of Grand Prix go and see who's going to be the best of the young ones. I just wish there was a bigger grid, but I think Toyota and those guys have done well to get the grid. But what I want to do, finish on, you mentioned him briefly before, or Mark actually mentioned, was Ken Smith. To do 50 Grand Prix, he raced when, you know, McLaren and and Holm and Brabham, all those guys were racing to still be going now. Yes, he finished a lap or so down, but he finished. And mate, any of us guys, or me if I could even fit in the car, we would finish a lap and our head would feel like it's going to fall off. We wouldn't feel our arms. He is truly impressive.
You know, they should be knighting guys like him. You know, we throw it to All Blacks so quickly, don't we? But you think about 50 years of New Zealand Grand Prix, look at the history on that trophy. Then you look at the Lady Wigram, all of that stuff, and Kenny's so heavily involved in it. And, you know, if we are going to hand out major Queen Honours awards for excellence in sport and stuff, you know, let's look just beyond rugby as well, because, you know, here is a gentleman who definitely deserves it.
Yeah, and you know, the guys he's helped, the Dixons, the Hartleys, the Liam Lawsons and Tom Alexander, all these young guys that Kenny sort of helped on the way and driven against them, showing them how to be beaten. You know, the fact that he won across in the 70s, 90s and 2000s is just insane. He raced once, I think I've mentioned before, with his special tablets taped to the steering wheel in case his heart attack happened again. He was just out of hospital. You know, I think he sort of epitomises what a real racer is. He's just kept going, and really I take my hat off.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I have to say, gentlemen, I have to say you guys have been fantastic today. Really enjoyed your import.
I'm just pleased you didn't bring up Liverpool Football Club.
No, I'll give you a text later.
You clearly got my email about my agreement coming on the show. We don't talk if we talk negatively about Liverpool. So really pleased you didn't do that.
Okay, well, leave it at that. Good.